welcome to Are You Karate Kidding Me?
Your resource for news, reviews, and items of interest from all around the Miyagi-verse. I'm your host, Colin Kanaday.
I'm your host, Jenny Carlson.
And we are back in the saddle again for Season 5, Episode 2. But, you know, let's address the elephant in the room. We've been out for a minute.
We've been out for a minute, indeed.
A hot minute.
Well, I think the minute is cooled.
The minute is cool, but that's all right.
It's because, like, a meteor, a long fallen meteor.
But look, a fair amount of stuff happened. We're not going to get into every granular detail.
Oh, I think
But there was
we
a
could.
Strike, so it's not like there was a lot going on anyway.
Well, we began our Season 5 recaps when the strike was looming, about to happen. And then when the strike happened, we took a break, and the break became longer than we expected. However, so did the strike. So yes. In fairness, maybe not to us, but to the whole system, it's been a bit of a cluster. We are back, however. We've missed a few things. I feel...
Well, we didn't miss a beat. We've been watching and waiting in the wings, ready to go.
You mean we've been brewmating?
We've been brewmating.
We have been brewmating.
Look, this is the podcast that coined the term Miyagi-verse. We won't let anyone ever forget it. And you know what? The Miyagi-verse ain't over till we say it's over, y'all.
You remind me every day.
Mm.
So, yes, we are back and we are excited. We have some in the can that we need to finish editing. We are happy to share them with you and to be back. And we are happy to say that Cobra Kai is back in production.
That's
for
right.
Its final season. Yes, yes, indeed. We just fast forwarded right to when everyone went back to work, and it's going very well. We got a video drop from the Cobra Kai team, a little mashup of all the talent claiming how excited they were to be back. It was pretty cute and very invigorating. So currently it looks like their release date for the final season of Cobra Kai will be the end of 2024.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the smart money. Obviously, nothing official's been announced, but usually Cobra Kai is a winter drop or a late fall drop. If it comes any earlier than that, I would be the first to be surprised, but it would be a nice, pleasant surprise.
It would be great to see everybody on the con circuit. I know we just had a panel at the Atlanta Comic Convention with the young cast who are now adult cast, but anyway... That was fun. I think we would see a stronger rollout if the release date were sooner. That's pretty obvious. So I think also we need to factor in the Karate Kid movie that will be coming.
Yes, this mysterious Karate Kid movie, which...
Now less mysterious than it was the last time we spoke.
Indeed. Well, now it looks like we're going to have to go back on a promise that we made way back in episode one.
I think Colin might have been the one to make that promise.
It's no secret this podcast is only interested in Miyagi-verse adjacent things. And back when we first talked way back in episode one, that Jackie Chan, soft reboot or remake or whatever you want to call it, was not technically part of the Miyagi-verse canon. But hold on, wait a minute. The multiverse has come for the Miyagi-verse. That's all I'm saying.
You'd think that as comic book people, we would have known that they would eventually go to a multiverse, because who could resist?
So apparently we're going to fold this Jackie Chan movie into canon. All I got to say is if they call this Karate Kid into the Miyagi-verse, which it is a Sony property, so that is very possible.
Wow.
If they call it that, Sony owes us a check. That's all I'm saying.
Or I will accept payment in the form of a Spider Pig cameo.
Yeah. And exactly.
Also fine. So yeah, we know that the Karate Kid mashup film starring Ralph Macchio and Jackie Chan had been shrouded in mystery. The Cobra Kai showrunner said they knew nothing about it. Ralph Macchio deferred last year when he was on his book, which kind of the way Ralph did it, because he's such an honest broker, it was pretty clear that he was going to be involved somehow, at least to me, but... Now it has been announced as soon as the strike ended in November, just about as soon as Ralph and Jackie Chan dropped a video. Ralph, Jackie Chan, and Ralph's strike beard, which actually, you know, there were the Dave Letterman and Conan O'Brien strike beards.
Yes.
But Ralph Macchio's strike beard, truly, truly something to behold.
Yes, absolutely. Something to behold.
If they want to send Daniel LaRusso into the wilderness to grow a strike beard in the final season of Cobra Kai, or to use his strike beard, I can only imagine he would become even more formidable in karate if he kept that beard.
Well, we can probably do a whole another episode on this. In fact, we will probably now have to do an episode on that Jackie Chan Karate Kid movie with Jaden Smith, I guess, since it's now part of the Miyagi-verse, we owe it to everyone. But it's the big question is exactly how much this will tie into Cobra Kai. Will Johnny Lawrence be in the mix? Will the sixth season of the show have a prelude to the movie? Is there going to be an after credit scene? Is Sam Jackson going to show up and invite everybody to join the Avengers? Who knows?
I mean, at this point, they could give us a CGI Pat Morita and nothing would surprise me. Although that would actually kind of irritate me if y'all did that. Don't do that, Sony.
Don't do that.
You know, I just want to say about this movie, I'm optimistic. Like, I know there's a lot of folks who are thinking this will draw thunder and fire away from Cobra Kai. And my feeling is the more the merrier.
Exactly. Cobra Kai's got one more season. And you know, we'll send them out with fireworks and all the pomp and circumstance there is, but there's got to be something for the Miyagi-verse after Cobra Kai. And like I said, if they want to do like a final scene in Cobra Kai that leads right into the movie, or do like an after credits that like teases the movie a little bit, that would be a fun thing to do. And it's something I would not put past, you know, TV movie executives in this year, 2024.
It also seems possible that... Well, anything is possible. I have not been paying attention to the commentariat on X, aka the website formerly known as Twitter, like I usually do. I haven't read every John Hurwitz Q&A. Maybe I've missed a detail. But while we await a release date for Cobra Kai, I think it's even possible that Cobra Kai gets released after the Karate Kid movie. Well, yeah, because here's the story. So originally we thought there would be a summer 2024 release for the Karate Kid movie to coincide with the anniversary of the original Karate Kid film.
I see where you're going.
But then the strike happened, both WGA and SAG-AFTRA, and that meant everything had to get pushed back. So now the Karate Kid movie, I keep wanting to say the Cobra Kai movie, we should be so lucky. The Karate Kid movie is coming out around, I think, December 13th, 2024.
Right.
So Cobra Kai would almost certainly have to tie in some way for that to make sense, unless it happened much later, I feel.
Yeah. Well, I mean, also, I mean, you bring up a great point. It just really depends on how, like, all we know is that Jackie Chan's definitely in it and Ralph Macchio's definitely in it, right? So theoretically, like, it could take place concurrently with Cobra Kai season 6, where Daniel's just like at the front door and he's like, hang on, guys, I got to go do something. I'll be right back. And then like that's where the Karate Kid movie starts. And then at the end of the Karate Kid movie, he comes right back in the front door and he's like, OK, where were we?
Or it's a parallel universe, Daniel, where Daniel never had a family, never met Amanda. Basically, just Daniel hooked up with Johnny Lawrence and the LaRusso fanfic relationship is in full flourish.
Absolutely.
Would also watch. Would enthusiastically watch.
Mm.
At any rate, we don't know enough to say, and I'm kind of happy not knowing, but I'm also happy that I don't have the responsibility for figuring it out, because I am a Cobra Kai fan podcaster here to recap Cobra Kai, my favorite show.
That's right.
And so, you know, and speaking of Cobra Kai and the final season, there are only so many things to be crowbarred in. I know people are running to Atlanta to be extras in the show, which, bless you, that sounds great. Also kind of exhausting, having spent some time on sets. That sounds like a lot.
Mm.
Of all the talent who may or may not appear, a lot of people are asking whether Hilary Swank will pop up.
That is a great question.
Yeah, and I know that in a recent interview with Collider, she intimated that she might not appear, but you know, she said, "I don't think I am in that." And I don't think that's enough to tell me she's not in it.
All I know about Hilary Swank right now is she's off doing those quasi-religious movies and that all she all we really need from her is an appearance in one episode. We were lucky to get a little Elizabeth Shue mini arc with that kind of two-parter episode, right?
And Robin Lively.
Yeah, and we got a cameo by Robin Lively last season, which I didn't think we would get, but they found a way to bring her in. So at the very least, maybe someone could just please pick up a phone and call Julie and let her know what's going on. Or maybe she pocket dials Daniel. Who knows? It could go either way.
Maybe she sends her a naturally long-lived hawk to commune with Eli. And the Hawk-Eli continuum is the actual inheritance of the next Karate Kid.
That's right. Inherit the hawk.
Inherit the hawk.
Hashtag inherit the hawk, everyone.
That's right. It's both like a combo of like inherit the wind, but also with some Save the Tiger vibes.
Exactly.
I'm here for it.
That's right.
Yeah. At any rate, all this to say, do we know anything for sure? Not really, except that our favorite people are back at work. And I, for one, am bracketing all thoughts and feelings about this being the last time out. I'm just going to enjoy the ride for as long as possible and know that it's like we have a bunch of new friends that we can follow in all their future endeavors. So we won't get there unless we start recapping.
Well, that's true. You know, Buddha teaches us that all joy is transitory, but I think...
Wow, you've been spending a lot of time in that ashram from the next Karate Kid.
Hell yeah. But I think the bottom line is the Miyagi-verse ain't over till we say it's over. We're at least good for all the remaining episodes of Season 5 and all the episodes of Season 6. And we got to do the next Karate Kid. And now we got to do the 2010 Karate Kid.
Look, so, let's not say things we can't take back. I'm definitely here for the next... Ooh.
Plus specials, plus a trailer reaction or two. I think we're good for that.
All right, that's fair. I mean, I've taken on new levels of coffee consumption over the past 6 months, so I think I can summon the energy. So, without further ado, are we back at it?
Oh, we're back at it, baby, with Cobra Kai, Season 5, Episode 2, Mole.
Mole.
We go back to Okinawa, 1972.
Army training is not enough!
And just to drive home where we are, we see a giant bell behind a man who is yelling instructions at GIs who are pounding sand. From the logo, from the voice, it is obvious this is young Sato. Here being played by Akihiro Kitamura. And he is yelling at these GIs who are pounding sand.
A young Sato says army training is not enough. To succeed, you must overcome.
Overcome pain, training their mind and body.
And among these trainees is a young Chosen who is literally sandbagging it. I mean, punching sand is really difficult to begin with, right?
Sato finds that Chosen had put a pillow in his bucket of sand to make it easier, which I personally admire. But Sato asks Chosen if he wants to be a coward, as Chosen casts his eyes down in shame. Then, as they resume, Chosen plunges his fist into the sand determinedly.
Yeah, physics of this cheating mechanic aside, after getting berated by young Sato, young Chosen goes right back on to cheating.
Wait, he took the pillow out, didn't he?
No, he put the pillow right back in.
No, did he? Seriously? I need an instant replay.
Let's go to the videotape.
Incredible.
I'm going to need like a Mythbusters style video to see if it actually is easier to punch sand with a pillow in it. Because I feel like it'd be pretty irritating to punch sand, pillow or no.
I can think of no one better suited to make that video than you. So cut to the new Cobra Kai flagship store.
We've got Terry showing off his new sensei collection to the students, and an undercover Chosen is among them.
He also looks like he has a Peloton going on back there. Got all kinds of equipment. This is something else. Terry tells the students that John Kreese wasn't Cobra Kai. They are. So we're tying up those loose ends from John Kreese being taken off to jail. He's brought in some of the finest senseis in the valley to train them as part of their sensei job interview. And as Terry's talking, Tori walks in. Terry announces the champ is in the house and the others applaud. Chosen looks knowingly at her. She looks a little unsettled. And as she takes her place in the line, Kenny asks when she's bringing in her trophy, and she responds, "Not today." Chosen approaches her and says, since she's the champion, he will not go easy on her.
As they kind of break up into their teams for sensei evaluations, Chosen singles out Tori instantly and gives her his Chosen shtick.
His patented Chosen shtick. Cut to outside a bodega in quote-unquote Mexico, where Johnny comes out holding burritos wrapped in foil. Robbie's looking at the map, figuring out their route, and a man approaches him, explaining in Spanish that he has to move the van. That would be the Eagle Fang Mobile. Clueless, Johnny thinks the man is trying to buy the Eagle Fang Mobile, telling him it's a very special van, but then asks the man where he can find Hector de Salazar. So Robbie tells Johnny it's not a good idea to throw Hector's name around, given how dangerous he is, but Johnny remains unconvinced, and they're still debating that when the van is towed off.
Yes, Johnny and Robbie, in mid-plan formulation, still hot on Miguel's trail, run afoul of this Zona de Towaway, leaving them stranded without an Eagle Fang Mobile.
And that's what happens when you throw around a casual metaphor. Cut to the Villa de Salazar, where Miguel comes down the steps in a room that could almost be part of the LaRusso manse in the great TARDIS of the Miyagi-verse. Mariachi-sounding music plays, and Miguel looks pleased to be there where Hector's working at the kitchen stove, and he greets Miguel as if he's just come from a nap.
Yeah, Miguel comes downstairs just in time for Salazar's famous churrasco. Miguel drops the humble brag that he might have won some karate championships back in California.
Yeah, Miguel says that's where he picked up those quick reflexes, and Miguel notes that he studied karate. And Hector says he's surprised he hasn't heard of Miguel, a champion. And Miguel shyly says, well, you might have. That's kind of why I'm here. Thankfully, at that moment, Luis runs into the room with his mom on his heels, and Hector observes that the kid's a real handful. Miguel asks him if he's ever considered having any more kids of his own, clearly feeling out how Hector might feel about having a surprise son.
Boy, a lot of sloppy undercover work going on in this episode. Maybe it's just because we've been watching so much of The Americans lately, but it's like, come on, these guys are like amateurs over here.
Yeah, I mean, you'd think all the TV shows that are set in California with crime procedurals would mean that all Californians were basically a nation of great detectives, but we see that if you're from the Valley, you might not know what you're doing.
Hector's girlfriend and kid rumble through. Miguel uses this as kind of a conversation opener, but only the kind of sloppy undercover cop would use. Hector shares that he doesn't have any kids of his own.
Yeah, he says Luis is from her previous marriage, and he almost had kids, though. He was with someone once and even got married, but she left. Gosh, I wonder who that could be. And the fact that Hector is still talking about that like it happened recently isn't a great sign. If he hasn't moved on from Carmen yet, he's likely holding a Miguel-sized grudge. This is when he pivots to invite Miguel out to his nightclub, El Hoyo Verde, which is the Green Hole, which, of course, a wrestling reference. Why not the Blue Beetle? I don't know.
Hector uses this as an opening to invite Miguel to work with him. It's a take-your-mysterious-teenage-house-guest-to-work day in Mexico, I guess. Meanwhile, at the Cobra Kai flagship store, Chosen is chiding Tori that she is troubled.
Yeah, Tori is half-heartedly beating up on a strike pad that Chosen's holding, and he says, you're better than this. Tori asks him how he knows, since he's never seen her fight, and he replies that it's obvious she's troubled. He speculates maybe she doesn't want to train anymore now that she's a champion. She says she doesn't just fight for a trophy, she wants to defend what's hers. And she asks what Chosen fights for, and he memorably says, honor.
Chosen says he wants to be a sensei for honor because honor is everything. No one can take it from you. He is a sensei that fights for his honor. He is the one that you be thinking of.
It's true. Hear me, Kumiko?
Senseis together.
Fighting forever.
And we did it all for the glory of love.
No one can take honor from you. Only you can take honor from yourself.
I'm verklempt.
Terry enters, and Chosen reveals his undercover identity as Sensei Joe.
Yeah, Terry asks what they're working on, and Chosen says,
first train the mind, then train the body.
That alone should have been a giveaway that he's actually a Miyagi-Do. He then admonishes Tori that if she wants to overcome her troubles, she must face them directly. This is like when Fräulein Maria in The Sound of Music says to Liesel, when Rolf goes full Nazi and they do a reprise of 16 going on 17.
As old as you're going to get.
Well, yeah. And Maria says to Liesel, you can't run from your problems. You have to face them. Anyway.
For instance, if your troubles are a hurricane, you would want to run right out into it.
At any rate, Terry looks on with interest. They go again, and Tori strikes the shield with determination. And Terry tells her she's doing nice work. Chosen, still focused on Tori, tells her to do it like this, and then uses Tang Soo-do techniques on the strike dummy, which of course leads Terry to ask Chosen where he's from, and the latter replies, Kyoto. Terry tries to catch him out by mentioning a shrine there, the Fushimi Inari Shrine, famous for its series of red torii gates, but Chosen's ready for him.
Yeah, when Chosen claims to be from Kyoto, Terry tries to shrine-splain to him about the...
Hate it when people do that to me.
About the Fushimi Inari Shrine, but Chosen counters with some temple hipsterdom of his own. He thinks he'll prefer the Nanzenji Temple. It has a warmer sound.
Too many tourists.
Much like Rick Steves on Europe, Chosen wants to show Terry Japan through the back door.
Terry seems satisfied for now.
Cut to a mercado where Johnny and Robbie are walking through an open part of the indoor market, and Johnny complains it will cost 4,000 pesos to get the car out of impoundment.
4,000 pesos? It's like $1,000,000.
Robbie notes,
it's $200, but still, we only have about half that.
They come upon dudes facing off in a chili eating contest, and Robbie instantly appreciates the heat of the peppers the dudes are working with because he and Shannon are big fans of the hot ones.
The first of a few YouTube references this season. What I can't seem to figure out is why Johnny and Robbie can't find Miguel without the van. Does it have radar?
It has Eagle Fangdar.
Okay, it has Miguel seeking radar on. Maybe it's a Knight Rider situation. Maybe it's just we've never seen inside the van, so we don't know that Kit's already in there.
What is inside the van? I mean, we've seen the front seats of the van, right? Or we're about to. I guess we've seen them driving in the van, but like,
well,
what's
actually,
in the back of that van?
Johnny, as the consummate 80s villain, would not be driving Kit. He would be driving car. Kit's evil twin.
That's right. Yeah. That's fair. Kit. You would be driving car. But now you've got me thinking, what is in the van, right? Like, is it Eagle Fang posters? Is it a popcorn machine? What does Johnny have in there that he absolutely had to take with him to Mexico?
There's one thing I can guarantee you is in the Eagle Fang mobile.
Yes.
It's a training dummy that he puts in the passenger seat anytime he wants to use the carpool lane.
Wow. So you're saying that Johnny has a whole HOV side hustle where he just uses his dummy to drive in high occupancy vehicle lanes?
This is California. It's a lot more common than you think.
A lot of stuff happens in California, man. Yeah. I mean, the traffic there is intense.
I bet there's a chip van that just roams around like full of like inflatable dummies, CPR dummies that have just been confiscated from cars in the HOV lane.
Well, and when he really has to drive fast, that's when he needs his corn nuts for fuel for himself, right? To keep himself focused, like a Costco or Sam's Club size box of corn nuts.
Oh, for sure.
And he's off the fried bologna because he's trying to live right, I presume. Maybe
exactly.
Not. Anyway.
Back to this El Mercado, where Johnny, being Johnny, wants to jump in head first, but Robbie then volunteers. He's got this, he says.
Yeah, apparently because of the hot ones, he knows a few things. So he says he's going to enter and win them the money they need.
He ponies up to the table versus El Bombero.
We've got Angel Rosario Jr. as El Bombero. And he looks nonplussed by the whole deal.
Intimidating looking dude, too. Clearly, this guy has done some stunts. I can guarantee you, without looking at his IMDb, he's been on Sons of Anarchy. He's just got that look.
He's got the look.
She's got the look.
So, the camera pans to a jar full of peppers, and then those peppers vanish, showing us the passage of time. Robbie is sweating and clearly under duress. He's got a big glass of milk next to him. Just like Gordon Ramsay on The Hot Ones, he's having a time.
My heart's beating as well, like the drum. What is going on with these wings? Did you make this sauce? Did I really hurt you that much?
But he's also undaunted. He demands the hottest pepper they have, and El Bombero yells out the name. It sounds like El Dragon, so the dragon?
Mm.
Enter the dragon. Meanwhile, at Villa de Salazar, Miguel's in the guest room calling Carmen, and she answers, relieved to hear from him, but all Miguel wants to do is lash out at her for not telling him the truth about Hector.
Miguel places what must be a very expensive cell phone call just to berate Carmen for missing out on Hector. This conflict seems a little manufactured to me, but let's just see how this scene plays out.
Well, it's a little throwback to Toxic Miguel from the end of season one and some of season two, right?
That's true.
That's a Miguel we haven't seen in a while.
Yeah.
So Carmen tries to explain herself, but then Hector comes into the room to tell Miguel it's time to go, which must be terrifying for Carmen to hear his voice on the other end of the line. At any rate, we cut to El Mercado, where Robbie's got a big glass of milk in front of him, and Johnny says they're going all in. Toto! Putting his cash on the table. And just like Sam doing keg stands in season two, Robbie does kata to prepare for the challenge. He eats the pepper and the Miyagi-Do theme takes on a fast Morricone pacing as he chews, but then it's done. Robbie might have broken a sweat, but he can keep the pepper down.
Unlike Robbie, you can keep a good pepper down. El Bombero then eats the same pepper and does some convulsions before spitting milk all over everyone. It's a real gross scene.
Better milk than pea soup.
Indeed. Cut to north of the border at the Cobra Kai flagship store.
Yeah, at the end of training, Terry invites Sensei Jozen to help him at his house tonight. He'd like to get to know him better. And after Jozen walks out, Tori approaches Terry. He asks her if she's ready to go to the next level, but she says, what's the point, given that he'll just buy the ref off?
Yeah, Tori reveals that she knows all about the bribery at the tournament last season. Terry claims it was just an insurance policy. He insists that she's the real champion, LaRusso knows it, everyone knows it, and that's all that matters.
Terry also acknowledges that he's not Kreese, and he doesn't have the same life experience that Kreese and Tori had in common, but he does know how to use every means at his disposal to assure victory. And adds, if a person steals food to survive, are they cheating? That's the old Jean Valjean defense.
Are you guys crooks?
Is it wrong to steal a loaf of bread to feed your starving family?
No.
Well, suppose you got a large starving family. Is it wrong to steal a truckload of bread?
Uh-uh.
And what if your family don't like bread? They like cigarettes.
I guess that's okay.
Now, what if you sold them at a price that was practically giving them away? Would that be a crime, Bart?
Hell no.
God, this is so manipulative of Terry. Anyway, he knows Tori won't be able to easily argue with this, and he puts the decision in her hands. If she leaves, he won't hold it against her. But if she decides to come back, he will make her the future of the dojo. This is what we call the Faust legend. And Tori should not make a deal with the devil.
Much like any gym membership, if you love it, let it go. And if it comes back, it was truly meant to be.
Indeed. Cut to the reclaimed Eagle Fang Mobile.
Recently recovered, back in the Eagle Fang Mobile, Johnny and Robbie are now back on track. Johnny doesn't know how Robbie ate that pepper, though.
Well, Robbie's chugging from a bottle of milk as Johnny says he doesn't know how he managed to do it, and Robbie reveals he didn't. He brandishes El Dragon, the hottest pepper of all, as a shocked Johnny asks what he was chewing on then, and then Robbie shows him the bag of candy worms that Johnny picked up on the trail in the previous episode.
Yeah, Robbie admits that he palmed it, although he should probably still be wearing plastic gloves or something while handling that pepper. You don't want to rub your eye after touching that thing. But
just a culinary tip from over here in our podcast studio.
Keeping a pepper like that is super dangerous. All that capsaicin will still contaminate skin and fabric. This has been a public service announcement.
Literally a hot tip, but the biggest takeaway of all may be that this is a big bonding moment between Johnny and Robbie, where Johnny says,
that's about the most badass thing I've ever seen.
At that moment, Johnny's phone rings. It is Carmen calling to update Johnny about her call from Miguel. She overheard they're going to El Hoyo Verde. And Robbie's got an app for that.
Cut to El Hoyo Verde, where it seems Hector owns a UFC ring of some kind.
Yeah, almost identically dressed Miguel and Hector walk onto the upper level of a nightclub with a giant fighting cage in the center. Okay, I just want to say, they kind of look like the moment in Twins and Rain Man, respectively, when our two principals arrive wearing the same suits.
Yes, exactly.
They're not wearing the same suits, but it's a similar vibe where you think maybe Miguel is going to become the next Hector.
Yeah, Hector wants a mini-meek, clearly.
Indeed. As they walk up there at the catwalk,
in the upper level, an extensively tattooed fighter approaches them, and Hector introduces him to Miguel. His name is Vicente.
Miguel quips that Hector's kind of like the mayor around here, and Hector drops a bunch of really cryptic red flags about his past and his many enemies.
Hector says he made a lot of money back in the day, and in that business, he made a lot of enemies too, but he tells Miguel he's put the past away.
Miguel just kind of cruises past that and ominously toasts to putting the past away. Put that past away, Miguel.
Put that past away.
And now, finally, we cut to the LaRusso-mance, where Daniel and Chosen are in Daniel's bedroom as Daniel lets Chosen try on some of his clothes for his big night at Terry's.
This is a cute scene.
It's super cute.
The first blazer that Daniel offers Chosen is too small. Daniel shakily says he doesn't want another size up and moves to get it, but Chosen observes Daniel's nervous.
Daniel replies that everything Silver does has a purpose. He's playing five-dimensional chess here, but Terry's a man without honor.
That's right. Chosen replies that his uncle tried to teach him about honor, but he refused to learn. I guess the pillow is a sign of no honor? Anyway, we cross-cut briefly to Tori here looking at her trophy, and Chosen says he thought shortcuts, and cheating would help him move farther, but his cowardice was exposed, and Chosen confidently says they'll make sure everyone sees Terry's true colors.
Daniel lays out Terry's MO here. He says that Terry will try and ingratiate himself to Chosen, just like he once did with Daniel himself. But Terry's plan has an expiration date. Terry will figure out their game eventually, so Chosen has to be ready to fight.
Yeah, their conversation becomes voiceover as Terry and his butler welcome Chosen into his palatial residence. Terry pours him whiskey from a crystal decanter with a cobra head, and holy shit, what's the deal with that decanter? And now that we're in Terry's palace.
Terry opens with a 50-year-old Yamazaki whiskey. Then he has his people bring in filleted hamo, emphasizing that it's a taste of home.
Did you tell me that whiskey costs over $700?
Okay, so we broke this down on...
You guys know we like to drink sometimes.
We did a little online shopping for our possible next party episode.
Indeed.
And, I mean, there's different levels of Yamazaki whiskey. You can get 5-year, 12-year, 25-year, 50-year, and the price, I think the 12-year starts at like $300 and it goes up from there. Guess what? You probably can't even find 50-year except at a very special stores.
You'd have to be Terry Silver.
You'd have to be Terry Silver to get it. And even and at that point, yeah, you're probably, what, 50 large maybe?
I mean.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, they proceed to have a very dense conversation.
Dense and tense. Everything's a test with this guy. Terry wants Chosen to tell him what brought him to the valley. And Chosen says he was planning to retire when he saw Terry's advertisement, but he's not sure he wants to. He presses Terry about his former partner, then says Terry's students are well-trained, especially his champion. And Terry replies that the students are his legacy, but Chosen wants to know whose legacy Terry carries. And Terry replies, Master Kim Soon-young, among others. Of course, this is a callback to The Karate Kid Part 3.
Mr. Miyagi, my name is Terry Silver. My master is Kim Soon-young, South Korea. My teacher sends his respects.
Terry asks Chosen who trained him, and Chosen replies, this is true, his uncle. Chosen says his father died when he was young, and when Terry asks what killed him, Chosen replies,
cowardice.
And Chosen also says,
I struggled with my own cowardice. I lost a fight. I should have won.
This is a reference to his fight with Daniel.
Yeah, Chosen says his own father died of early onset cowardice. He then shares that he should have won that fight from Karate Kid 2, noting that rivalries die slowly in Japan. Silver says that his own rival is right here in the valley. PolitiFact equals true on that one. Little does he know, they're both talking about the same rival.
Little does he know, or much does he suspect.
This guy, LaRusso.
Chosen listens with interest, and Terry says,
but it's never too late to get the last laugh, right?
It's never too late to get the last laugh, much like the Joker.
Wow.
If you gotta go, go with a smile.
He invites Chosen to follow him. He wants to show him something.
Cut to El Hoyo Verde, where Johnny and Robbie bust in wearing matching FBI shirts.
Yeah, they come in through the back door into a kind of PT prep area for the cage match fighters. Johnny is unimpressed with this MMA grab-ass bullshit. Color me completely unsurprised. I mean, Johnny and Robbie, they look like FBI agents, at least from the front, and that's exactly what you want to wear when discreetly looking for your missing student whose mortally dangerous father also happens to own the nightclub.
Yeah, it's a case of FBI in the front, party in the back. Johnny proceeds to continue asking after Hector.
Yeah, he asks loudly for, again, Hector the Salazar, telling a bouncer-looking guy that he needs a man, which probably sounds alarming coming from an FBI agent.
Johnny continues to ask in broken Spanish, I need a man.
I got a man.
I'm not trying to hit that seat.
I got a man.
What your man got to do with me?
I got a man.
A henchman calls up to Hector to alert him that some gringos are nosing around.
Up on the catwalk, Hector Salazar answers. The caller says that white men are here and it looks like they're from the FBI, and Hector tells him to keep the agents busy. Miguel asks Hector if everything's okay, and Hector turns to Miguel with a dangerous look on his face and starts grilling Miguel about who he called earlier, asking him why he came to Mexico, if he was following him, and if he's with the feds. Hector demands Miguel's phone and says not to make him ask again. Miguel hands over his phone. Hector scrolls through his calls. Doesn't Miguel have a passcode?
I mean, Miguel's just not practicing good phone etiquette. While the FBI has no real jurisdiction here, it's enough to trigger Hector, whipping him into a paranoid episode. He hassles Miguel about calling his mom. Hector thumbs through Miguel's phone, but fortunately never gets a picture of Carmen.
Then Hector adjusts Miguel's shirt in a kind of apology, but it reads like a creepy gesture of control, kind of like when Kendall Roy hugs his brother Roman at the end of Succession and sort of reopens the wound on his face. Is it a hug or is it something else?
And that's when Hector spies Johnny and Robbie in their big, bold FBI shirts and decides to book it.
That's right. Hector tells Miguel, sometimes people aren't what they seem and you can never be too sure. Tells Miguel they should get out of there. That's when Johnny and Robbie emerge on the floor by the cage and they're looking around when Johnny spots Miguel heading off the catwalk. Johnny calls his name, but Miguel doesn't hear over the noise of the announcer. Johnny points him out to Robbie, and then the bouncers spot them.
Just then, the henchmen and Vicente the Wolf Gonzalez enter to keep Johnny from following. The Wolf tries some MMA on Johnny. Johnny calls in the White Lightning to deal with the Wolf.
Boy, the music here is rad, and you can tell that this is just pure fanfic, right? Like, since Johnny lampshaded that he thinks it's grab-ass bullshit, it's even more hilarious to watch him kick some MMA ass.
Yeah, Johnny's holding his own very well against the Wolf.
While Johnny looks like he might be on the ropes, though, Robbie throws Chekhov's chili pepper at Johnny from the sidelines.
And then Johnny squirts the deadly capesin directly into the Wolf's eyes.
Yeah, he gets in a spin kick and asks the guy he dropped and probably blinded where Hector is.
It's a real Dark Knight situation.
I want the Joker.
Nobody's gonna tell you nothing.
Where is he?
Also love the announcer guy just going all in.
Yeah, the announcer's here for it. Thanks, White Lightning. Meanwhile, at Silver Palace, we're in Terry's trophy room. Now, Terry's house looks immaculate, and I think it's really cool. Not a bonsai tree to be found, though.
Bonsai tree.
So, yeah.
That explains a lot of things about Terry.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe if he got a bonsai around there, he would mellow out, but we'll see.
Yeah, he's got some samurai suits. One of them kind of looks like it belongs to Kylo Ren. Unsurprisingly.
Indeed. Yeah, Terry shows off his scary sword collection, but these are no mere QVC knockoffs. These are all originals. We got some Hattori Hanzos, a Green Destiny, and a sword wielded by Usagi Kenshin himself. The name of the sword is Meo Aru Kayodai, or Honored Brother. Ironic, get it?
That was wielded by Usagi Kenshin at the Fourth Battle of Kawanakajima. It's a real sword. Well, a mythical sword and a real sword, right?
It looks like he's also got a claymore back there, but it doesn't look like a claymore from any movies I recognize. It would have been cute to like sneak like the Highlander sword in there, but it's not over yet.
That's right. So Terry implies there are few things more valuable than a good story. And Chosen replies, a story is only words, but the belief in the story is much more valuable. That's when Terry notes that Chosen isn't sold on Cobra Kai. Chosen wants to know Terry's true ambition, and Terry reveals he's thinking beyond the valley. He wants to make Cobra Kai and karate as synonymous as Starbucks and coffee. This is straight out of, like, Austin Powers, right? That's how Dr. Evil made all his money while he was cryo-frozen?
Yes, that's the exact same plan from Austin Powers.
I just feel like they're missing an eye patch.
How about new?
Mm-hmm. Terry basically says that if he can't have kids, then he wants Cobra Kai to live rent-free in the heads of every kid in the world.
Why can't he just clone himself? Wouldn't that cause us both less pain and more pain? Yeah. Terry says that his plan is only something he would confide in his right-hand man. And he asks Chosen if he wants to take on that job. Chosen agrees, but when Terry proposes a toast to righting the wrongs of the past, Chosen says, Kari. And Terry echoes him, but it's clear from his expression, as the camera pans in, there's more to that exchange than meets the eye.
Cut to a new location. This appears to be Hector's Cantina.
Or is it a taqueria?
Or is it both?
We can't order, so we don't know.
Indeed. Hector pulls Miguel in and drops the shutters and tells Dante and Randall to scram.
You know what the real tragedy about all this is? I'm not even supposed to be here today!
Hector wants to lay low for a while, maybe like a long while. Miguel asks why, and Hector takes the opportunity to get hella scary.
As he locks himself and Miguel in and brandishes a bottle of tequila behind the bar, Miguel asks whether they should be getting home to Maria. And Hector replies that she's only with him for his money anyway. That's when Hector asks Miguel about Icarus.
You know about Icarus, kid?
Well, I know about Kid Icarus.
My dad used to tell me all the greatest stories. That was his favorite.
Fly too close to the sun, Chiquito. You burn your wings right off.
And he says the sun is the government. And if you fly too high, it'll bring you down. He says people will always come after what's yours. And they want him to sleep with one eye open, just like Lars Ulrich. Anyway, he says he can never go back to Ecuador.
It's a clumsy metaphor, to be sure.
Miguel asks what happens, and Hector says success is what happened. He was practically Miguel's age when he got married to that woman he mentioned earlier, and he admonishes Miguel never to make the same mistake. He says that that woman interfered with his success, and her mother was even worse. Yaya? He's going after Yaya?
How dare he?
This country, you've got to make the money first. You get the money, you get the power. And when you get the power, you get the woman. That's why you've got to make your own moves.
Hector tells Miguel that he doesn't regret a thing.
Yeah, but we could tell from Miguel's face that he's now understanding Hector is every bit as bad as Carmen said.
Nothing.
That is the cost of doing business.
Nothing.
Actually, Edith Piat would agree you shouldn't regret anything.
That's when Miguel decides maybe he should hit the rookie road.
Yeah, Miguel looks horrified, and Hector offers him chicharrón, because, you know, that's what you need now, right? Miguel says he should better be going, and Hector says chicharrón for one, tells Miguel to take care of himself. You can tell he's a true sociopath. No actual care for Miguel here.
Now I want chicharrón for lunch. Cut to outside the taqueria. Sad Miguel theme kicks in as Miguel feels his way about things. He then calls Carmen using those expensive mobile minutes.
So many minutos.
Indeed. To apologize. And that's when Johnny rides up in the dirty airbrushed Eagle Fang mobile.
Johnny calls Miguel's name and Miguel turns to see Johnny standing in front of the car in his ripped FBI shirt. And Miguel, bursting into tears, lets Johnny hold him as they both cry. They're both hugely relieved to see each other, but Miguel pulls up short when he sees Robbie standing beside the Eagle Fang mobile. They're just lucky Hector didn't see them.
Well, I mean, if Johnny and Robbie come up to me in the middle of the street wearing FBI shirts, I'm like, wait, you guys joined the FBI? How long have I been gone? We just got back from Quantico, kid. It's a tender reunion, but enough of that. We got to get back to the Cobra Kai flagship store where Tori declares she's back for good and puts a trophy on the shelf. But class is canceled because Terry has some evil business he needs to take care of. And that's when Sensei Joe arrives, just in time for Terry to call him on his bluff.
Yeah, Jozen arrives as Jozen and asks Terry if he's early for Project Sensei. Terry calls in the other sensei and then tells Chosen he's right on time, calling him by his real name. How did he know that? Chosen asks what's up, but rather than cutting to the chase, Terry leads with a story like a sinister President Bartlett.
You know, my wife, Abby, she never wants me to do anything while I'm up. 28 years ago, I came home from a very bad day at the
state. Did you know that 2,000 years ago...
She told me not to get on that damn bicycle while I was upset, but I did it anyway.
A Roman citizen could walk across the face of the known world free of the fear of...
I guess I was just about as angry as I've ever been in my life.
Terry's story starts on the About page from the Suntory Whiskey website.
Have you ever heard of a man, Masataka Takatsuru? About 100 years ago, he moved from Hiroshima to Scotland, studied organic chemistry. Then he returned to Japan with the secret of great whiskey. He built up his own distillery just outside of Kyoto. Suntory, the whiskey we drank last night. I've had the pleasure of drinking it right where it's made. Considered the best in the world. And every time I raise a glass with one of my old friends from Kyoto, we toast. Kanpai!
But the last time in the sword room, Chosen toasted the way they do it in Okinawa, kari, like a rube. This seems really familiar to anyone who listened to our episode on Cobra Kai Season 3, Episode 4, The Right Path, the one where Daniel goes to Okinawa.
So imagine my surprise when my new friend from Kyoto raises a glass and says something they would only say in Okinawa.
Man, the Palpatine death chorus here is really scary.
Yeah. Terry, once he's revealed his gambit, offers to triple to anyone who can take down Chosen. But unfortunately, the senseis attack one-on-one like a bunch of rubes themselves. What is this, an 80s ninja movie? Chosen makes quick work of them because not one of them knows the drum technique.
Chosen knocks back each sensei in turn as they come at him, giving us a serious shot of old-school martial arts energy, complete with some sped-up frame rate, plus more sweet modern sweeping slow-mo. And Terry looks on with smoldering rage. Chosen meets him where he's at, telling him he's gonna draw a line, as Captain Picard might say.
The line must be drawn here! This far, no farther!
No more expansion.
No more senseis!
No more senseis.
No, challenge Miyagi-Do.
Do not challenge Miyagi-Do.
Not come near Russo family. You cross line, you will beg for mercy.
No!
Who's the badass now?
Who's the badass now?
Terry and Chosen glower at each other, and Chosen walks off as we cut to the end snake.
And now, Jenny, I turn to you and ask, what'd you think of this episode?
That's a great episode. I mean, it's strange to see the Mexico plot tie up so fast.
Mm-hmm.
It has the same heightened storytelling pace we saw in the previous episode that really takes season 5 to the next level. It was great to see Chosen and Terry Silver face off. I'm really glad, unsurprised, and glad to see that Daniel knew the game would be up very quickly and they were prepared for that.
Mm-hmm.
Above all, I'm just so happy to see Miguel and Johnny together again and to know that Johnny and Robbie are getting along better than ever. How about you? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's very satisfying to see Johnny and Robbie continue their Batman and Robining all over Mexico. I think it's really clever the way they both fill out Terry's backstory and also let him play this gambit with Chosen at the same time. We learn a lot about Terry. We learn a lot about Chosen. We don't even really see much of the LaRussos in this episode at all.
Mm-mm.
It's all about Miguel. It's all about Chosen and his journey.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a fun episode that really builds out the connective tissue of the Miyagi-verse in a fun way.
Yeah, agreed. What questions did the episode raise? Where are we going?
It is very interesting the way that they sideline Kreese.
Yeah.
We know that Kreese is still a going concern to some degree, but the show does not want us to be concerned with it right now, right? It wants to tie up all this stuff with Miguel and Johnny and get us all back north of the border so that we can continue this saga. This is a side quest.
Yeah.
If this were a video game, and we got to wrap these side quests up so that we can get back to the main story, which is, how is Terry going to take over the world, guys? And how can we stop him?
Yeah.
I think Terry's plan actually is weirdly sensible, much more sensible than the plan from Karate Kid 3. Terry's notion of, we're going to make Cobra Kai synonymous with karate, is a very new school Silicon Valley business style of thinking of things, where it's like, we're not just going to have a service, we're going to have a monopoly. That seems very consistent with marrying the old school ethos of the Karate Kid movies to the new ways of thinking. In a weird way, it's a metaphor for streaming television itself. It's just Terry doesn't know that there's a bubble coming.
Yeah.
It's a karate bubble in the form of Chosen coming, that he's going to burst it.
It's true. I think it's interesting that Terry mentions Starbucks. I mean, again, I can make the direct parallel to Dr. Evil's funding, et cetera. But I'm surprised that Terry doesn't have a more souped up idea. Why didn't he say he would be the iPhone of karate?
Mm-hmm.
There's something very elitist about how his Cobra Kai dojo is taking shape with all those fancy machines and all the outfits. Like, clearly that Dynatox money is all going to making them into elite fighters,
mm-hmm.
not just everyman fighters, right?
That's true.
Yeah. I thought it was really cool to see Chosen doing his thing as Jozen.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked the shout out and the scene of young Sato. That was fantastic. And that guy really nailed the voice. Just like Terry Silver's sensei trained GIs naturally, that's Sato's business, right? We saw very much a military-based town when we visited Okinawa in The Karate Kid Part 2. So it's interesting to see that reminder of how much this, if The Karate Kid is about cars, it's also 100% about military experience, its culture, and its afterlife.
That's true. And then again, it's a great case of pulling those real world details into the narrative, right? Karate was able to propagate itself when all these GIs overseas learned karate in Asia, in Southeast Asia, and then they brought it back with them to start dojos in America, hence the karate boom of the 80s, hence the Karate Kid movies, and now hence this.
Yeah.
So it forms this very nice line of continuity, and it's nice to see the show then go back and acknowledge those roots. Yeah, it's a nice real-world detail.
Yeah. I'm intrigued with the story of Chosen's dad.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to him? What was his dishonor, and what was his cowardice?
Yeah, still a few details left that we'd like to see built out. And of course, we've now learned that Cobra Kai is not above a fun flashback. So maybe we will get to go back to the future one more time and see some more Chosen flashbacks.
Yep.
That would be fun.
Some Chosen.
Or they could do like that very first Kreese flashback we saw, where it's a bait and switch, where there's a character we think is chosen as a young guy, and it turns out to be his dad or something. That would be a fun switcheroo.
Yeah. I mean, anything's possible as long as we get a sixth season. So, thinking about this, what themes are going on here that we see unfolding for the rest of the season?
I think it's interesting that they're drawing a parallel between actual fathers and sons and ideological fathers and sons in this episode. And I
people
think,
who have no children, right? Chosen versus Terry Silver.
And I mean, that's an overall theme of the show, but this episode really drills down on it in a very explicit way.
Who's your real dad? Johnny Lawrence is my real dad, not Hector the Salazar.
Yeah, exactly. And Terry wants to be the ideological dad of every kid in the world, apparently.
Yeah.
Dream big, buddy.
Do you think we've seen the last of Hector Salazar?
I'm trying to think. Yeah, we kind of leave him in a very ambiguous place. So he could turn up again. And he could be a very potent antagonist if he does show up again. Because here's somebody who is adjacent to the karate world, but maybe not directly related. But, I mean, he feels as much a threat as Terry did. That's the thing. It's like Terry was sidelined as a threat for nearly 30 years and then suddenly came out of the background and exploded.
Yeah.
And so the same could happen with Hector, to where it's just like, just when we think we'll never see him again, he'll turn up. Maybe he'll turn up in the next spinoff in another decade.
Incredible. I feel like if anything happens to make Miguel prominent or famous,
mm-hmm.
especially given that Hector is somewhat tapped into the fighting circuit, even though it's MMA,
mm-hmm.
I could see him coming back to haunt them. And that actor is terrifying. I don't know if he would be the major antagonist of a final scenario for Cobra Kai or the Miyagi-verse at this moment, but I would definitely be freaked out to see him again.
Yeah.
I think that's an asset to the storytellers. That fanfic scenario of Johnny Lawrence versus the MMA people with the announcer going on,
that was great.
Incredible. Just incredible. I want to know all about that.
Which brings me to the next logical question. So, Jenny, what are your Easter eggs for this episode? What are your favorites?
Well, I had one favorite above all, and I'm not ashamed to admit I didn't notice it until, like, I've seen this episode a zillion times, and the table setting was so effective I didn't catch this very obvious Easter egg until the last time we watched this episode, which was the giant bell waiting to go up to the bell tower.
Mm.
The bell, I guess, is in a way, it's not as important as the clock tower in Back to the Future, but it has some of the same symbolism, right? Like the bell's going to go in and then they're going to have to repair the bell later again. So
yeah,
that was really neat to see in that beginning deal. I don't know. I'm trying to think if I had any other ones, but that was the one that really stood out to me. What about you?
It was nice to flash back to Okinawa in general. I like those little glimpses that we get. The guy that got to play young Sato was pretty great. Yeah, a lot of like low-level terrifying performances in this episode.
Yeah.
It was scary, but it was like a PG-13 scary. Like just shy of, everybody felt like low-level threatening in a really good way.
The nice thing about young Sato also was that he had a life beyond his revenge for Miyagi. His sure. desire to take revenge on Miyagi.
Miyagi.
Miyagi! Miyagi!
You forget. You betray me.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I don't know if they're Easter eggs, but there are a lot of great little details. When the Eagle Fang Mobile comes back to them, it's now got graffiti on it. I was just thinking earlier in El Hoyo Verde, aka the Green Hole. So they're gringos in the Green Hole.
Mm-hmm.
Is that irony? I don't know. I don't even know if that was intentional, but it was good.
Yeah, I think the way that Johnny was about MMA, like the way they have Johnny basically be a giant doofus,
mm-hmm.
whose highest role is loving and being a cheerleader for his biological son and his spiritual son. It's on full display here. And I have to say, not an Easter egg, but a great callback, the moment when Robbie shows Johnny that he used the worms instead.
Mm-hmm.
And Johnny's so proud. Like, I think that's a smart thing about this season, is that they give us these moments of catharsis with these characters.
Mm-hmm.
Where we've been waiting for a long, long time, and we don't have to have a big fanfare for it. It's just as part of the flow of the series.
Yeah.
It's really nice. What about MVPs? Who is your MVP of this episode?
My MVP. I think there's a lot of good candidates, but I gotta give it to Johnny.
Oh.
This time. My MVP is Johnny because he was able to hold his own against the wolf. With a little assist from his Robin, he was able to basically use a pepper, like so much shark repellent, to get out of that jam. But rarely has Johnny been more Johnny, but also on point in an episode. He's a doofus through the whole thing, but he manages to doofus his way right to his goal and get it. It's pretty remarkable. Yeah. And those 80s karate skills coming in. Very handy. It's like a, yeah.
Oh, man. I was going to say Miguel. Because
Miguel's a good choice.
Because he goes on the whole journey of being excited about Hector and connecting with him and thinking that Carmen betrayed him by not letting him relate to his father, and then seeing his father for true, for his biological dad for who he really is. And
I can see that. I think that's a great choice, and I will back that up because Miguel goes on a whole arc in one episode.
Yep.
Like, and
he sells it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sholo sells it.
And as an actor, Sholo gets to do a whole range of things all in one episode. So yeah, he really nails it.
And they know who they have on their side as they write these episodes, but like, not everyone could have pulled off. I mean, when you do something like Cobra Kai did at the end of season 4, where Miguel had to go on this journey to find his father.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, though oftentimes there's a heightening at the end of a season where then they have to walk it back the next season. Right. We talked about that here. It looks like Johnny and Daniel are getting closer. It looks like this is happening or that is happening. And then they have to walk it back a little bit to pick up kind of where they left off with the plot, if not the character moment. And someone who wasn't Sholo might not have been able to pull off such a journey that makes us think, okay, now we can hit pause. But he did. And it was really good. And they did a great job pairing him with Luis Roberto Guzman. And they did some incredible work together. And these are actors who I don't think had ever done scene work together. Now I'm talking about Sholo being the MVP and not Miguel. But I think in terms of like physical ass kickery, Johnny wins. I think in terms of emotional ass kickery, Miguel wins. Because Miguel is transformed and still, rather than making a fear-based decision or trying to stick around with Hector, he gets out of Dodge.
So yeah, two characters, one making...
both alike in dignity.
One making all the wrong decisions, yet somehow getting to his goal. One trying to make all the right decisions, yet somehow getting further from his goal. But they both meet in the end. I think that works.
Well, in the end, Miguel gets closer to his goal because he realizes where his family's been the whole time. And that the answer to who he is within him. It's almost like Mr. Miyagi whispered to him, it's inside you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It's like he needs a bonsai treat. So what are you curious about seeing next time? What are some of your questions going into the rest of the season now that you've seen this?
Well, I mean, now that we've wrapped up Miguel's plot thread for now, I think it's all back to North of the Border action. I mean, I remember distinctly when we first did our watch through this season, I'm like, okay, well, I can see why they're wrapping up Miguel's thing as soon as possible, but also that's conflict that they're leaving on the table. So there must be some greater conflict coming down the pike that they want to clear the table for.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember this being particularly puzzling when watching this narrative the first time through. So I'm trying to think back to how I felt in that moment. I'm like, okay, yeah, we got to get all our characters back north of the border, back to the valley, so that we could deal with this real problem, which is whatever the hell Terry is doing, and how do we do that? But then there's a lot of kids, and they all got baggage with each other, and how are we going to resolve that?
Yeah.
And I think those are also threads that need examining before we can really go after our main threat.
Good point. Yeah, we got to get the band back together.
We're getting there. But
we're getting there.
We're still not quite there yet.
Well, all right.
All right. Well, on that note, we will wrap things up for now. But please follow us on what's left of social media. We're on Mastodon. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook. We're on other services as well that I will not mention.
Indeed.
And
yeah, we are actually
podcasts from there.
On unmentionable platforms and others, we are Karate Kid Pod.
Yeah, exactly. We're Karate Kid Pod on other social media platforms that shall remain nameless. But yes, you can also follow us at areyoukaratekiddingme.com, and that will also point you toward all our feeds and all our socials. So no worries there. We're on iTunes, Spotify, Overcast, wherever you download podcasts. We'll be there. Whenever a guy's kicking another guy in the face, we'll be there.
Yeah. That.
Yes. Whenever a guy's trimming a bonsai tree, we'll be there.
Well, that's very soothing.
Yeah. But yes, it's been a pleasure, and we will see you guys next time for Cobra Kai Season 3, Episode 3, Playing with Fire.
Playing with Fire. Don't, see y'all then.
Don't get burned.
Don't get burned.
Until then, I've been Colin Cannaday.
I am Jenny Carlson.
And we'll see you around the Miyagi-verse.
See y'all around the Miyagi-verse. Are You Karate Kidding Me? Is hosted by Colin Kanaday and Jenny Carlson.
Intro music is by Chepo.
Cobra Kai music is by Leo Bierenberg and Zach Robinson.
Karate Kid music is by Bill Conti.
Rate our show on Apple Podcasts or your podcatcher of choice to help grow our listenership.
Email us at karatekidpod@gmail.com with questions and comments, or find us on social media.
Use the Twitter handle @karatekidpod.
This podcast is independently produced
by Gekring Media.
Given an interview in one of those teen magazines, and somewhere between movie stars and makeup tips, she talked about her feelings on a woman's right to choose.
You're writing a fascinating version of history, my friend.
Tropical storm is gaining speed and power. They say we haven't had a storm this bad since you took out that tender ship of mine in the North Atlantic last year.
Seems my granddaughter...
Mendoza on the bench. We're not fighting a war.
Now, Annie, all of 12, has always been precocious, but she's got a good head on her shoulders, and I like it when she uses it, so I couldn't understand it when her mother called me in tears.
You brought me in on China, and you brought me in on guns.
3.8 million new jobs, that wasn't good. Bailed out Mexico, increased foreign trade. 30 million new acres of land
for
conservation.
Any harm befall even one of its citizens?
You can't conceive, nor can I, of the appalling strangeness of the mercy of God. Says Graham Greene. I know whose ass he was kissing.
He can walk across the earth unharmed.
I think you're just vindictive.
Cloaked only in the protection of the word civis Romanus. I am a Roman citizen. So great was the retribution of Rome, universally understood.
And where is the
as
warning
to the rest of the world that Americans shall walk this earth unharmed, lest the clenched fist of the most mighty military force in the history of mankind comes crashing down on your house?
Into my house, Leo, and you said, Jed, let's run for president. And I said, why? And you said, so that you can open your mouth and say what you think.
This is more important than re-election. I want to speak now.
Where is the...
That's not enough to buy me out of the doghouse. I'm the president of the United States, not the president of the people who agree with me. And by the way, if the left has a problem with that, they should vote for somebody else.
You're a son of a bitch, you know that?